court will proceed to the fifth case, Andreas versus Ashcroft. Mr. Neely?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, I would like to reserve 3 minutes, if I may.
Surely.
First of all, I would like to thank the court for giving me the privilege to be here from Cincinnati. I'm an attorney who practices in Cincinnati.
Welcome to the Seventh Circuit.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, this case probably resolve on whether or not someone who has deemed to be an expert is capable of saying or stating something which is absolutely nonsense or is based on any kind of reasoned analysis. Ms. Gebrandreyes is a citizen of Ethiopia. She came to this country in 1995, on December of 1995. She resided in Cincinnati. She came here from Saudi Arabia, where she was a maid. And she, shortly after coming here, she applied for asylum pro se. She filed that application herself. Her English wasn't very good. And later, a friend referred her to an attorney here in Chicago, where that attorney assisted her in writing a new application, and with the help of an interpreter, who actually she had called the interpreter, and the interpreter had referred her to that attorney, Mr. Hagen here. And one of the issues that came up at the interview, at the interviewing officer had some doubts about the validity and or credibility of a document that she was a member of a certain group. She sent this, the officer sent this document to I think Washington, Virginia, and this gentleman testified at cross-examination that he did not know anything about the group. He did not consider whether or not the group was an underground organization. He did not consider whether or not this group, who is basically fighting the government, had any kind of a seal or documentation and so on and so forth special to this group. He had no idea. And that's why our main issue in this case is that under Daubert and Kumho-Tyer, that the judge, as a doorkeeper, as a gatekeeper, should not have allowed the testimony of this expert. We concede that he had the expertise to analyze documents, but that's what Daubert and Kumho-Tyer dealt with. I had a small part in Daubert. I used to represent at one time Merrill Dow. And we have one of the issues that ultimately led to the Supreme Court was the fact that we had all these PhDs from some of the finest universities in the country, but they were saying something which was not based in what we call the laws of nature. I mean, they had PhDs, post-doctoral degrees, but they were saying things that they didn't know anything about. And that's what the argument is here. And the Kumho-Tyer was, again, another case, just like this one, where the gentleman who was testifying on a tire blow-up, he was an engineer. He had the requisite college degree, but he was basing his testimony on something he didn't know anything about. And that's what this issue came about, where this gentleman testified that he had never seen anything, he did not know anything about OLF, he did not. But that testimony colored the judge, the trial judge, so much that he started looking for discrepancies where none existed. For instance, whether or not your son Gavin Dallas was coached. What trial attorney does not coach his witness before, you know, going to trial? Coaching the witness, I mean, horse shitting, as they used to say it, you know, old days.
Which is different from coaching. Coaching is giving the words to say.
Yeah, but I refer the court to the page 223.
No, it's saying, but yeah. the coaching, I exactly. think, is a bad term.
Yeah, I understand, but, you know.
I read the script. What you were doing was pointing out what language is appropriate to deliver the script.
Exactly, exactly. And they picked on that as an issue that maybe she is not credible. But this court recently decided a very similar case, Gorgias, from the same country, where there were a great deal of discrepancy, and this court remanded the case back to the BIA with instructions that maybe BIA should choose another, you know, immigration judge to review this case on remand. And that case, I don't have to cite it, it was a 2003 328 F3rd 962, where Your Honor wrote the decision for the majority. The discrepancies in this case were very minor, because once we look at the page 222, the immigration judge, to his credit, asked the court translator to translate at the end of the trial the letter which was at issue, written in American. You know, this is the letter that she wrote, gave it to the translator, my client wrote, gave it to the translator, and the translator gave it to the attorney. And this letter is absolutely consistent with her testimony, is consistent with, you know, the corrected version of the immigration I-589, you know, that was filled out, you know, originally with some correction that was made because of the years and the time issues that was, you know, wrong. But what I am asking this court to do, at the very least, to remand this case to the court based on both Daubert and Kumhotair, so we can have someone to review this and whether or not the document was or was not fabricated. But the
you're into your rebuttal time. You know.
Thank you.
Mr. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is William Irv from the Department of Justice, representing the respondent, Attorney General John Ashcroft, in this matter. To begin with, to speak to some of the issues that the petitioner's counsel raised, I first would say that this case is clearly distinguishable from the credibility finding that this court made in Georgias. In Georgias, we did not have a determination of a fraudulent document. In this case, we do have a determination that the document submitted by the petitioner during her asylum interview and also before the immigration judge was determined to be fraudulent. In Georgias, it didn't exist, that fact pattern. Second, the distinctions made in Georgias in regards to this case, the discrepancies in Georgias were much more minor than what we have in this case. I mean, that's what I would say in regard to the distinction between Georgias and this case. The second point is that Petitioner Counsel relies on two Supreme Court precedents regarding the submission of expert testimony during a trial. Based on the Federal Rules of Evidence. As this court well knows, the Federal Rules of Evidence do not apply to a hearing before an immigration judge. The standard for determining whether or not evidence submitted, particularly expert testimony submitted, is whether or not it's probative and fundamentally fair. I would argue before this court that what happened before the immigration judge and in immigration proceedings were probative and fundamentally fair regarding the expert testimony and the finding that the document that she submitted was fraudulent. I would also like to point out that board precedent allows an immigration judge under the matter of OD to find that on the submission of a fraudulent document that no further testimony has to be accredited by the immigration judge once the document is determined to be fraudulent. Your Honors, in this case, the judge found the alien was the petitioner was an incredible witness and therefore ineligible for asylum and withholding of removal. That decision is based on credible evidence and therefore should be affirmed. The immigration judge in this case found incredibility finding based on two reasons. One, the submission of the fraudulent document, and second, a backup reasoning was for the purpose of the inconsistent statements and contradictory statements in regards to the asylum application, her testimony before the asylum officer, and before the immigration court. Those findings of incredibility are specifically based on specific and cogent reasons, and therefore those findings by the immigration judge are reasonable. Your Honor, to review some of the findings in this case, we have the testimony of Mr. Ziegler, a expert witness regarding documents, forensic documents. He has 30 years experience. He reviewed the document and concluded there were many red flags that came up upon his inspection of the document. Specifically, Mr. Ziegler found that the fact that the seal that was submitted on the document that supposedly alleged that the petitioner was a member of the Oromo Liberation Front was in fact a Xerox seal. He further concluded that the document that alleged that she was a member of this group was a constructed document. He came to this analysis based on the fact that the seal was Xeroxed, and then there was original typewriting put on the Xerox copy of the letter with the seal and an original signature. Under that determination, he determined that the document itself was fraudulent. He also concluded the document was fraudulent because the document was typed with an American typewriter, while supposedly the letter came from Ethiopia. That was another reason regarding the fact that the document was fraudulent. He also looked at the document and found that there was no security seals on the document itself. There were no markings on the document. There's no telephone number, no heading, no letterhead in regards to the document that was submitted that supposedly established her membership in this particular group. Furthermore, the letter was a much smaller size than what one he would expect to come out of Ethiopia. That was another reason for the determination that the document was incredible. In addition, Mr. Ziegler's testimony is further supported by the Department of State country reports, which find that during that period there was significant problems with submission of fraudulent documents being submitted during asylum applications. In fact, there's a cottage industry in the United States in which many Ethiopians were presenting documents allegedly establishing their membership from the Omar Liberation Front. So based on that decision from the expert, Mr. Ziegler, the immigration judge was clearly based on board precedent was able to find that this petitioner was incredible. But he then further went on to list a fair amount of inconsistencies brought to light during her testimony, during her removal hearing. Specifically, there was inconsistencies regarding the time and the amount of time that she was detained by the police. At one point, she alleged she was detained for a month and a half, and her mother was detained and released 9 days prior to her release. Then, before the asylum officer, she alleges that she was detained for 13 months and that her mother was detained for 9 months. Then, in the application, she then alleged that her mother was released 2 days prior to her release. So in this case, what we have is a petitioner unable to give a straight account of how long she was detained and what were the circumstances behind the detention. And I will also submit that this is not a situation where the case was based on the confusion of the different calendars between the two different countries. These are substantial, large differences of time that the calendar, either calendar, wouldn't have any effect on. And more to that point, is she's not citing the specific dates, but rather two particular chunks of time that one would expect her to know. The second point of inconsistency is she couldn't even remember at what point she was a member of this group or when she became a member of this group. In her asylum application, she said that only her father and her brother were members of the group. That's not what she then later said when she said that that she was a member of the group by her father's registration while she was in Ethiopia. So these are two minor, major inconsistencies in coming out of her testimony in the removal hearing before the immigration judge. Your Honor, as to the issue of the federal rules of evidence, I would restate that they do not apply in these proceedings. And the immigration judge followed the correct standard in allowing the testimony to come in, and the Durbert case is not applicable in this situation. And finally, Your Honor, petitioner challenges this court's decision in Georgias regarding the streamlining procedures of this case. I would argue that, in fact, it does not raise a distinction that this case is, in fact, controlled by Georgias, and that no due process violation was occurred when the board streamlined this particular case. Any questions, Your Honor?
Apparently not. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Ms. Namey?
Thank you. Your Honor, one of the issues that really is surprising in this case is Mr. Ziegler testified that this letter coming from an underground movement did not have fax number, telephone number, address on it. What underground movement that's fighting for the separation of the group from the country in a very brutal country that was going through in the civil war with Eritrea and Ethiopia, and of course Eritrea broke away at the time, would actually publish there where they are. And also we have attached a copy of a recent Ninth Circuit decision liturgy in our short appendix, saying that even assuming that Mr. Ziegler was right, that does not mean that my client did actually fabricate this document. In fact, that specifically the Ninth Circuit says on that, most importantly, while the forensic testimony concerning the envelope may undermine the letter's credibility, it does not by any means establish that they were deliberately fabricated. The BIA is leaping from point A to find whether she lied. If we remove that piece of paper from this case, everything else is consistent. Reverend Halverson testified, he is an expert, he did not know my client, that she was Oromo, her name was Oromo. She came here, the judge said that she did not produce a birth certificate. Her passport was that, the INS had stamped it at the entry that she came in as a maid to a princess, Saudi princess, it's part of the record. And her father's name is on there, and mother's name is on there, all that, information there. The differences and the mistakes were all corrected at the interview. And so it's always been the jurisprudence that once the mistake is corrected, the corrected answer must be accepted, because when these applicants are filing asylum application per se, they do make a lot of mistakes. Thank you very much.
Thank you again. All right, thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.